As I was preparing for this Sunday sermon, more than a few things came to mind, but one thing that came to mind was a trip that I took with my mother and my aunt, her sister, now well over 30 years ago, I'm sure. I can't remember the exact date. So it was quite a while ago. And I went with my mother and my aunt, and there may have been a few of my cousins or my sisters, I cannot recall. But for some reason, we were in Clarion County in western Pennsylvania, in rural western Pennsylvania. And while we were there, we made a trip to the site of the rural farmhouse where they spent their very early childhood. This would have been in the late 30s, very likely. And when we got to that site, they were, of course, trying to remember exactly where it was. They remembered the names of the streets and the rural routes. And eventually, we ended up in this place that was, in fact, where their childhood farmhouse would have been. And the only evidence there was that there had ever been a dwelling in what was, at that point now, just basically a clearing near the woods, was the outline of the foundation in the soil. A stone foundation peeking out through the soil. You could still make out the outlines of the farmhouse. And as I watched and listened and heard my mother and her sister as they walked around the property, remembering where things were and how things were done, they began recalling now decades-old memories of their childhood in that spot. There was still the lilac planted at the corner of the farmhouse foundation. They remembered it from their childhood, and now it was, of course, wildly overgrown and unkempt, but still there. And there was the nearby spring where they often played, and next to the spring, the site that they pointed out was where the spring house was. Does anyone here remember what a spring house was? We may not have been brought up with it, but before refrigeration, rural farms would dig into the dirt a small house, a small storage area near the moist soil, which was always cooler than the surrounding air. So before refrigeration, a spring house was your option when you lived in the country. It kept things for just a little bit longer because it was cooler than the ambient temperature. And they also pointed out from the foundation of the house across the gravel road where the barn used to be, and that was when I heard the story of my grandmother, their mother, who would stand at the farmhouse kitchen window with a rifle and shoot the rats in the barn across the road. Which I found completely mystifying because my grandmother was the most modest, quiet, never wore jeans. I was like, Grandma did that? And as we walked and I listened and I watched and overheard, it was a somewhat mystical experience in a way. It was as though their childhood house and home sort of rose from the ground, and the only visible remains and reminder were the foundation on which it was built. We here at MCC Portland are at a particularly unique time in the life of our community. This is a season where we are discerning and deciding together about the building in which we sit today, this house of worship that many of us here identify as a spiritual home. And as you are now aware, if you did not know before you showed up this morning, that our board of directors recommends the sale of this building. We have issued that recommendation. There have been surveys, fact sheet, all of those can be found, printed, and also on our website. But as we approach the meeting today and our decision making as a community, it has seemed wise that for a few Sundays to approach this important decision, to reflect on the meaning of house and home, and how they're related, more importantly, how they are different. Not just in our own lives, but in the life of a community, particularly in the life of a community of faith. So the first week, 2 weeks ago, I looked at a pivotal moment in ancient Jewish history, and that was the building of the first temple in Jerusalem under the kingship of Solomon, the son of David, more than 400 years after the Jews had left their slavery in Egypt, after 40 years of wandering in the wilderness, another 300 years of God's presence and the Ark of the Covenant dwelling in a tent, King Solomon built a grand temple in Jerusalem as God's dwelling. And last week, we looked at two scenes from the life of Jesus that revealed his relationship, his complex and complicated relationship, shall we say, with the Jerusalem temple. This one was the second one that was built centuries after the first one was destroyed. Jesus had a complicated relationship with that sacred space of his time and of his people. We have stories that he visited regularly. He taught and he argued and listened to other teachers there, and he was openly critical of its abuses. Created, in fact, a very public disturbance when he drove out the money changers, the act which in all likelihood was the last straw for the authorities that motivated his killing. But even with that complicated relationship, it seems to me that he modeled a few good principles that we do well to follow. Those principles that I pointed out, that it is God's house, not ours. What happens is important. What happens in the place, in the site, is important. But the third one, what happens outside, is more important. So there is an ambivalence about sacred spaces in our own religious tradition and in the scriptures we call holy. On one hand, celebrated as an important place of great spiritual meaning and a focus of community and devotion, an outward and visible sign of an inner reality, an expression, a reminder of a people's highest values and their most valued relationship, a reminder of the bond between God, the people of God, and with one another. On one hand. And on the other hand, there is a certain suspicion, even criticism, because the primacy of that right relationship with God and one another becomes too easily not primary but secondary to maintaining bricks and mortar, rituals, rites, and rules, which can overshadow God's concerns and values. Criticized as a site where power can be centralized and then distorted and abused, where God's presence is in fact more obscured than revealed sometimes. So the difference between a house and a home, the difference between spiritual house and spiritual home, the essential difference being a house, even a house we call God's house, is a place, a physical setting. But it cannot be confused, nor can it be substituted for a home, which is about relationship. So today's story that we hear from the Gospel according to Luke is the story of a building of a house. It's a short illustration, a short sermon illustration that Jesus used. The story of the wise and foolish builders, it is sometimes called. And it may be a familiar saying of Jesus. It's also found in the Gospel according to Matthew. In both cases, Jesus offers the contrasting example of two different builders, one who builds with, the other without, a firm foundation. In Matthew, it's actually referred to as one who builds upon the solid rock, the other builds upon the sand. The illustrations are slightly different, but the same story. The contrast between the builders and the consequences of the choices that they made upon building. When the storm rises and the floods come against it, one stands and the other falls. Greatly, it's pointed out. If you know your Gospels well, you may recall these words are the concluding words of that famous collection of Jesus' sayings. In Luke, it's called the Sermon on the Plain. In Matthew, we more famously call it the Sermon on the Mount. These are the concluding words of the Sermon on the Mount, the Sermon on the Plain. The only difference is its location, one on a mountain, the other on a plain, if that wasn't clear. It's a short example, particularly if you have come from any kind of church background, and it may be even more familiar because the images of firm foundation and building upon solid rock have inspired centuries and centuries of Christian hymns and songs. We sung one today. We'll be singing them again. The church's one foundation. How firm a foundation. My hope is built on nothing less. And we could go on and on and on. I have heard this story and sung those songs since my childhood. But in my upbringing, and dare I say, throughout our tradition as a whole, we have sadly overlooked a surprisingly important detail in Jesus' example. And it is arguably the point that Jesus was trying to make that we have overlooked. What is the foundation or the rock of which Jesus speaks in the example? I had always had the impression that it was somehow faith or trust or belief, or so many other hymns proclaim, upon Jesus Christ himself. Now, those are not unimportant. I want you to hear me loud. This is not unimportant. But that is not the language used in this story. The wise builder is not one who believes rightly, or the unwise one unbelieving. The difference is one acts, and the other does not act. The Greek word is an action verb, even poieo, which is to make or to do. That means the concluding point of the most famous sermon of Jesus, the Sermon on the Mount, is not about what you believe or don't believe. It's about what you do or don't do. And furthermore, as the parable continues and the storms and floods come, it's the one who acted who had built the firm foundation, the one who did not act that crumbles in the storm. It's our actions that build the foundation, or our lack thereof, that sets us up for a fall. So I encourage you to read or to reread these sermons of Jesus. You can find the Luke's version in chapter 6 of Luke and Matthew's longer version with more sayings, Matthew 5 through 7. Not only does his sermon start by redefining who it is that we call blessed, in Jesus' terms, that's the poor, the grieving, the meek, the reviled. But it's where Jesus demands quite clearly a reversal of all of our values. Love who? Your enemies. Do what? Turn the other cheek. Give to anyone who asks. Do not judge. Forgive and give generously. The disposition of our hearts, known by how we speak. All things in Jesus' most famous saying that concludes with those who listen and act are the ones building the foundation. So when we first notice a building, what do we first notice? I wonder. We may pay attention to its location, its size, its color, the style in which it is built. But unless you are someone who is an engineer or an architect, or unless you are looking to live in it or buy it, you probably don't notice as much the infrastructure, they call it the bones of the building. And few, if any of us, notice the foundation, because it is usually invisible and underground. And it is interesting to notice in this example of Jesus that there's no description of one house being bigger or smaller, one of them being more beautiful or useful than the other. It's the invisible part. Invisible 99% of the time. The foundation that has made all the difference. I recall during our first discussion forum on the board's recommendation several weeks ago, Nicole brought up the issue in our forum, which is one that I turn over and over again in my heart, and I have made no secret of my support for this recommendation. But she voiced aloud the concern that concerns me, that if in fact we choose to go to another location, that somehow that will resolve any issue we might have as a community, be it an issues of communication, be it issues of other infrastructures, be it financial issues. You know, and I use the example of in 12-step sayings, we are in danger of pulling a geographic. You know, you are yourself wherever you end up, unless you work on being different. So I have turned over and over in my heart, as supportive as I am of this, that we need to think about the foundation as well. How are the bones of our house? And I'm not talking this. How well do we model the values of Jesus, not just with our words, but with our actions? That's the foundation. So over these last weeks, I have been visited over and over again, not only by this illustration of Jesus, but by that first verse from Psalm 127, which we heard first. Unless God builds the house, those who labor, labor in vain. Unless God build the house, those who build it labor in vain. It has been a comforting reminder during this season because it's a reminder to me that this or any other facility is not my building or your building or our building, but it's God's. You bet. It's not my building or your building or our building. It's God's building. That should be a comfort to us. And it's a challenging reminder because is this or any other facility used to build up my purposes or your purposes or our purposes or God's purposes? So, at this meeting today, we take a very important vote. And I want to be clear, I am not going to underestimate the importance of that vote, but neither will I overestimate its importance. Hear that. I will not underestimate it, but I will not overestimate its importance. Because there is a more important vote before us this day and every day. There is a more important vote. Do you vote yes with your life and actions, regardless of where you or we are? Do you vote yes with your life and actions to building a spiritual house and making a spiritual home with your life, regardless of location? If we vote no and remain in this building indefinitely, if we vote yes and at some yet-to-be-known point in the future dwell in another facility seeking to make it a home, if we vote yes or no and do not engage with full-hearted commitment and embodied actions, God is not edified, our community is not better served, we will labor in vain, and we will set ourselves up for a great fall, regardless of today's vote, if we do not vote yes with our lives. If we do, dig deep, lay foundation on solid rock. Not just calling on God, but acting like Jesus. Then that is a house and a home worthy of the name MCC Portland.